We are back for Counterpoints in the post-major edition. There's obviously, I think actually this major, as usual, answered some questions, maybe put some people for the year where they're positioned, and there's no more tournaments. It's all over. Actually, I also like that detail in the same way as I like VRS exceeding the tournament. I like the way we actually have a proper like sport now, whether like it ends on the major, that's the appropriate time to end a contract, to sign a new player. Everyone can reassess for the VRS. Once you're out the tournament, you sort of take stock of the year, you wind down. People have already gone home from stage one, stage two. They're already like chilling. I actually think now CS is sort of like chilled in that. So maybe that's one area we don't give props to the TOs, because I actually do think if you go back, it's only even a few years ago, we were in like that thing where you had just the player breaks, and that was just because players demanded it. Aside from that, the year just almost never ended. It was just basically, when do you as a team stop attending events? I think it's pretty sort of neat now. I kind of like the way it works for storytelling and stuff.
Yeah, it's I guess everyone has been crying for that for a long time, you know, having the major to end the year. So I think that's a nice change. The biggest tournament is the one that also ends the year, mainly for the storyline, but also for all the transfer shenanigans that's always going to happen after major, you know. So it doesn't ruin, you know, the following two or three tournament where everyone is going to show up with a dead team.
Yes.
So that's something I like, because I feel like we had a couple of years where it felt like every second tournament you'd go to, there'd be like three or four teams who you knew were dead, you know, as in they would change players leading into the next one. So I think that's all a big issue. And then, I mean, what do the players have now? They have 25 days of a break,
that's,
you know,
pretty good.
From not playing tournaments. It's decent, I'd say, you know, but still, let's be honest, they have to come back at least a week, maybe a week and a half before to get ready for the next season. And it's still, you know, I think there's a world where the break could be, you know, maybe 6 weeks instead of 4 weeks. But all things considered, I think it's much better than, as you described, what we had, you know, pre-COVID, where it was just the Wild West, you know, those tournaments right. 24/7. So
tell you what, I'll meet you halfway, pimp, as a former player. Here's the deal. Okay. You can have 6 weeks. You just don't get 6 weeks of pay.
Okay.
I feel like players would go, you know what, Thorin, I'm all right with the 25 days. Yeah, I'll just take, please keep the $35,000 a month salary coming in. I will be there at the event. Because I know what you mean, by the way. One thing that I do think is underrated, because obviously we're getting into what in Sweden they call the silly season, where you have like all the crazy roster moves and all the transfers and stuff. One thing people do underrate, it's actually something that I think fans missed in Carrigan's post-major final speech. If you notice in the speech, he said what might be a curious phrasing to a fan. He said something like, I hope we stay together as a team, or that he didn't want changes. And then, but he gave the reason it was so he can have a holiday. Now, I think what a fan doesn't get about that is, if you make a roster move, well, the problem is even the first tournament does matter for VRS and the circuit. So that means you don't really start like 3 days before the event when you arrive. You're probably going to actually have to start with this new roster. And by the way, if you make two roster moves, you might have to come back a week early, mate, and just start scrimming. Like, it's true. And in fact, that's one area I think is probably one of the dirty secrets of esports fans maybe don't know. You know, back in the day, remember the infamous Evil Geniuses Beats Heroic one a few years ago? The real reason also you get crazy upsets in the first match of each season is sometimes a top team really did just take the time off and they were in the Maldives. Sometimes they didn't come back a week early and they're just like, you know what, fuck it. We'll just warm up in the group. We're not going to get eliminated. Like, that is kind of real. I know what you mean.
Yeah, exactly. And I think even if you go even further back, you know, back in pre-COVID days, there's been teams who made their name in the summer break. You know, I remember the old iteration of Heroic when they had, I think it was Blame F and Snappy and like,
yeah,
like with Muddy and that team. They were like, coming into the summer break, they were like a top 15 team, maybe top 16, you know, not more than that. Would occasionally get into the bigger tournaments. Then they decided, you know, they took an active decision that none of them would go on a break. They would play for 4 weeks straight and practice against whoever wanted to practice against them.
Okay.
And then come into the season, you know, and start off with a bang. And they went from being a top 14, top 15 team to like a top 4, top 5, top 6. And everyone was like, what the hell is going on? And they were the only team who practiced during the summer break. So used to be a time where you could take advantage of the fact that top teams would have such a packed schedule, you know, that they would have to take time off, obviously, because otherwise they would never have any time off. Whereas a team like Heroic, who would miss out on every second tournament anyway, they could just take breaks, you know, in the middle of the season. So I do miss those times, you know, to see who are the real grinders, you know, who are the ones who want it the most, in a sense, but also for the longevity of the game. And let's be honest, if you want to see Kerrigan play for 3 more years, if you want to see Saru play for 3 more years, then you got to give them breaks. Otherwise, you're just going to wear them out for 2 years and then you cry in 2 years' time and say, like, why don't they continue to play? Well, you kind of killed us, you know, by the schedule.
Yeah.
So I think we are I'd say it. You know, I'll give it to you. I think middle ground is where we're at right now. I think it could be slightly better, but it's definitely better than it was, you know, 5 years ago.
But this way, I will say on the point you made at the end there, if you do want players to be older but still compete and not use the excuse to retire, like if you want people like Snappy and Rainey, Carrigan, they're all our kids, mate. So you are going to have to give them like a little bit of extra family time, because that's like the bigger issue there. Because one thing I think is actually underrated in Counter-Strike is, I don't know about things like Formula One, I would guess it would be the same there, but in the major sports, people are so rich that I know, for example, in tennis, one of the reasons all those players play for like 20 years is because, bro, they just bring the family with them on the tour. The family just goes to all the events, and then anytime they're not playing, they're stuff with the family, right? Sure, people bring their girlfriends and stuff to events, but people generally don't bring their family. They do stay at home for that. I know even people like Anders, people might not know this, that's actually one of the reasons he started turning down events back in the day, is he didn't want to be away from his family like 300 days a year. You know, he'd be there 60, wouldn't he? It'd be ridiculous. So, no, that is a fair point, actually. I hadn't thought that. I'm thinking more like the 19-year-old kid, like, can I have 2 more weeks off? It's like, yeah, well, give me a week of that payback and we'll make it work, you know, make the numbers work. Anyway, the major, I do think, has brought some interesting angles up, though, because now the year's over, so we can have the following discussions, right? One thing I think is quite cool, Pimp, and this is an angle I haven't seen anyone come up with, is, bro, as soon as Apex won this major, he already had sprung to mind all these numbers that he'd looked up of what Astralis did in their first year. What people will miss there, Pimp, is he's not Thorin. He had to go and research that. But what's dope about that is, you know when a fan will like make it sound like they did it with Ziwu, bro, and the joke is Ziwu actually hasn't done this because Donk was number one last year, for example. When Ziwu became amazing, they were like, and he's going to be top one or two every single year for the next 7 years. And I'm like, bro, let him do it first. Like, do you know how hard that is? It's like when fans talk, you know, when a team's on top, they talk about like Furia, for example, they're going to win like 5-6 more tournaments. Like, mate, let's let him see, get 2 more. You know, let's get 1 more. You know how hard it is to win, bro. Carrigan's been in 1 million major finals. Like, if it was that easy, you'd just have like 6 majors at 5 majors now or something. So I do think people underestimate that part. But as a result, if you're a player, usually it's like you said on that past episode, you don't really try and like shadow box history while it's happening. You wait till it's over and then you look, right, how do my numbers stack up? What exactly was their win rate? So he knows all those numbers, bro. He knows how many tournaments they played, because he even did like the win rate of titles, if you notice. He knows how many trophies they won. He's figured out the fact that he won both the majors and then like, but they won one that year, etc. And again, we're not comparing the total Astralis peak. We're just doing 2018 versus 2025 for Vitality. But what that tells me is that actually Apex, I think this is dope, bro, is trying to think like, I'm part of a historic team now. How do we match up against what I assume he considers the best team of all time? I actually thought that was kind of cool, mate. So I actually think we should have that discussion. Since obviously we were there, we saw these teams play. What do you think the comparison is? Because I do think, unfortunately, like I just alluded to there, because we know Astralis did go on to then win the next 2 majors and won more trophies, I think people are missing. This is just about the first year, basically, about the calendar year. And if you compare the calendar year, I think it's an interesting discussion. I'm with people. If you want to do the full majors, yeah, let's see if I tell it you get 2 or 3 more majors. Yeah, go for it. But I think you can have this discussion. It's an interesting contrast.
100%. He kind of beat us to it, actually, because I remember speaking to Maui and Frey in the green room, and I posed the question, like, is this the best year? Is this the best year of a Counter-Strike tour has ever had? And we were, like, instantly, you know, diving it down to, okay, so it's either Astralis in 2018 or it's Vitality now. And we never really got to the conclusion. We just spoke about it. And then when he did the winners interview on the stage, we're like, we all looked at each other. Like, okay, well, let's talk about it now. So we had a little segment, you know, post that winner speech from Apex. But first and foremost, I just want to say it's fucking baller to do that as a player, because I think I said it the last episode as well, you know, in regards to the NPL thing. It's like most players are very good at playing Counter-Strike, but that's where it stops, you know. That's where they dedicate their time. That's what they care about. They care about performing. They care about being a good Counter-Strike player. They don't care about history. They don't care about being articulate. They don't care about necessarily educating themselves in all sorts of other areas, because they don't really have time for it. You know, it's a very focused life to just do one thing, and then that's what you get good at. So for me to see Apex have the capacity almost to think, you know, abroad, you know, what we would expect from a player of his caliber, I think that's fucking baller. I love that. I love a player who knows his history, and I love a player that is, as you said, chasing greatness in a sense. Like he's not satisfied with winning his second major right here, you know, with Vitality. He wants to win a third one and a fourth one, and he wants to establish himself as maybe the greatest in-game leader of all time. You know, he's chasing that next level of glory already by now, and that's what you get and what you sense from an interview like that. So I think he again, people obviously has this repetition now. He's either hated or liked, you know, the fuck you Apex is going around. But I think what I've experienced in every single arena we've been in so far this year, and people may not get the notion at home, They obviously yell at him. They say, fuck you, Apex. Whenever he stands on that stage and he wins the trophy and he does some sort of like a winner's interview, everyone is just obeying to him, you know, and giving him the credit that he deserves, you know. So it is kind of one of those relationships where they're hating him for the fun of it, but deep down, everyone respects the shit out of what he's done with Vitality. And that I like a lot. So want to clear that up from the get-go, because I do sense there's a lot of morons sitting at home, you know, that hear the fuck you Apex chants and then they don't listen to the winner's interview and they think everyone in the arena hated the fact that he won, right, which is far from the truth.
Okay. No, he's been like the wrestling villain, isn't he?
Exactly. And he's perfect at it. Now, speaking of Astralis 2018 and Vitality, I think, you know, just to open the floor, I would lean towards Vitality for a couple of different reasons, you know, for their year in 2025. I think what I value the most, you know, and it comes down to how you quantify it and what you value, but the whole streak of going into, is it 16 or 17 semifinals straight throughout the year? The only semifinal they missed was at Blast Bounty, the very first tournament with Rubs, where they lost 2-0 in the quarterfinal. So you can even say that in every single tournament they've been in throughout the year, they made the playoff. And at worst, they had one tournament where they only made the quarterfinal. Apart from that, it was minimum semifinal and a lot of grand finals and obviously a lot of trophies. I think that in itself is something that you, like, if you take Astralis' 2016 or 2018, they had a couple of tournaments, as far as I'm aware, where they failed to make the playoff or where they went out in the quarterfinal, or where some of the semifinal losses they had were in tournaments that, you know, Vitality would have won, you know, just by playing with their closed eyes. So I think in terms of having that streak of going to 15-16 tier one tournaments, only quality tournaments, they didn't attend, you know, let's be honest, they didn't attend
any,
you know,
PGLs.
They didn't go to the PGLs.
Fisher Playground, none of that,
Fisher, exactly, Starlighter, you name it. They didn't have any of those second tier tournaments, you know, or where the competition wasn't good enough. So I think that's my main argument. Then on top of that, you take the 9 trophies, you take the 2 majors in a year versus Astralis 1 major in a year. Obviously, it's a discussion you can have, but I think in terms of what I value the most, which is consistency in a game that has proved to be very difficult to be consistent in, then I think that's one for the history. Like, I don't think any team is ever going to replicate that. There will never be a team.
No.
And we probably said the same in 2018, but I don't think there'll ever be a team in modern day and age Counter-Strike where it's so competitive, where there's so much, you know, so many good players, so many good teams, so many teams with budgets that will go to 15 tier one tournaments, semifinals minimum straight, you know, let alone winning 9 of them. I think it's outrageous. So to open the floor, I would hear, and I would love to hear any counter argument to that, because I think that for me is enough to sort of like cite to Vitality. It's not that I've made up my mind, you know, but that's where I start.
And obviously, we'll just put in the disclaimer at the beginning, just to be intellectually honest. Obviously, these teams play a different game in a different era with different maps. They can't play each other. Technically, Vitality probably learned things from Astralis. Yeah, there's all that. It's the usual historical argument. But by the way, that's also why I really respect Apex for making this a real discussion and trying to use numbers, because he could easily do the thing that any modern sports player can do of just, I don't know that I always agree with it, but you can just say like, well, it's the modern day and that was back in the day and how would they do now? And you can always do that angle, but at least he respects it. Like you said, the cool thing here is he's not really competing against Falcons and Fury and Spirit. He's competing for I want to be in the greatest team ever. And by the way, I already know Apex. And here's what I'll tell you about Apex. This is how legit Apex is. Apex has 4 majors, Pip, but because he knows one of them was when he was an entry fragger, that's why he himself hasn't yet said the thing. Maybe I'm the best IGL. If they win another major and he has 4 as an IGL, I can tell you he'll say it. He'll say like maybe, or maybe he'll just say he is. And in that scenario, by the way, I will always make this point. I don't have to agree with you, but I'll tell you what, you have the right to say it. That's fucking, you've earned that, mate. If you can win that many majors as an IGL, you can put yourself in that conversation. It's why I've always thought, even though as the years go by, for reasons other than majors, I do start to think Carrigan's the greatest in-game leader of all time. Like essentially, I would phrase it this way. I don't think anyone ever did the position better for longer and at such a high level. But if Glaive went like, wait a minute, I have 4 majors, I'm the grits. I go, you know what, mate? No argument there. Just say, making my point here. Like, you can have that conversation all day long, and I'll never let any shithead on a forum say, like, nah, actually, that was ages ago, and he's over it. Like, no, he's fucking goated. What are we talking about? He's always in the convo. So here's what I would say. I'm actually surprised, because people would think you have a bias towards Astralis, and you always wanted to fucking play with him and all that. So people would assume you're going to say Astralis, but I actually think it's cool you said Vitality. I'll address some of the things you said there. I'll use a bit of the esports historian angle. Right, first of all, the whole number of top fours. That is actually an underrated angle, bro. If there's one thing I'm getting really bored of in discussions, it's where we do this thing. The best example ever is the HL TV number one award, right? People act like if you were number one, you were the best that year and no one else gets anything from that year. But then if someone's number two, you don't even mention it. It's like, you are a witch, just some HLTV guys decide who's number one and number two guys. Like, that's not a trophy. They didn't beat each other in a match, and then that guy got the fucking job. So on that one, I do think that you have to also, as well as like the peak of your time, you got to look at the floor. And put it this way, here's a statement I think I could make in light of what you said. I think this Vitality team has the highest floor of any team I've ever seen in Counter-Strike. Because as we're saying, a bad tournament was semi-finals. A bad tournament. That means no matter how bad it... And remember, there was like a month in the early on in the second season where Zimu just had like his worst, I'm going to say like 2 months or a month and a half or so. He just actually had a point where for him, he dropped like, you know, 0.2 rating or something, like some crazy amount. They still came in all the semis of those tournaments, mate. I think they even fucked around at the end of that and won once. So I think that is nuts. And I'll give you an example because you made a very, very key point there, which is they actually made it as hard as possible to do all of this because they didn't attend a single one of the cheeky tournaments. They didn't go to a PGL for easy prize money. They weren't at Thunder Pick World Champ. You know what I mean? Like, bro, this was the team that actually did stick with all the tier one, right? That never even happened in Astralis or anyone's day. Because back in the day, you also did shit like, you know, maybe your rival skips like a normal DreamHack and you just go to it and pick it up. Or maybe, I mean, a classic example in 2018, I can give you one actually, was I remember there was the one where at ESL New York, all the really good teams went, but because of Blast and the Astralis relationship, they went to Blast Istanbul, where it was like, you know, fucking the lesser teams. So actually that tournament, you could argue for business reasons, they didn't even go to where all the best teams were. Vitality went to all the best tournaments this year, none of the shitter ones. And as you say, mate, that semi-final streak is fucking unbelievable. Like, I can tell you, if you go back in history, if you go to the LDLC Envious team, they had a streak where they did like 14, 15 top fours. Bro, some of those were like, one was a LAN that you just get there in your top four. It's the finals of like Fragbite. One would be like, you know, again, a tournament where two of the top five teams don't go and you just get to go. And basically, if you beat like Virtus Pro someone, you're in the final. Like, then some of those, the number initially is the same, but then when you look at the quality of it, I don't think anyone can compare to the quality of what Vitality's done. Then also, think of some of the other things they did this year. Bro, how many fucking historic things? So in the first season, they won 7 straight tournaments. I hope fans understand this. I think Astralis probably were the best team ever. That's a discussion we can have in a minute, but they didn't do stuff like that. Even they would lose like every other tournament, you know, like they'd win like 2, or I think sometimes they won 3 or 4 max. Like, they would just lose one right after that. They were human. That's why in the first season is when I went really crazy on Vitality. I kept saying, if you go back, I think I said after Katowice, like, bro, they have a chance to be like the best team ever. Look how good they are and how well-rounded. And then if you look at how that first season went, it's like no one's ever been that consistently good. Then also, it shows in that streak of best of 3, best of 5. Bro, they won 37 in a row. I don't think people will ever appreciate how bonkers that is. You can't have one. But by the way, they had them. They had matches, you know, where a Mongols or a Mouse would take them right to the limit. The Falcons won, obviously. They had them 12-6 on it. But the point is, they just never lost. In fact, after that Falcons one, where they came back from the 6-12, that put them in that category where, like, you'd pick this team if your life was on the line. You know what I mean? Like, that's the team you'd take to win in that same sense. And then obviously they won both the majors, no matter what. Remember, people even would have argued, and everyone's going to delete this from history now. Every fucker told us before this major, you have to say it's Fury is going to win. Are you an idiot? Like, we weren't even supposed to believe this was the best team. Now everyone's going to change their mind and go, oh, we were always number one in the team of the year. Like, you're conveniently saying that now. You didn't say that when they'd won one trophy in the second season, guys. So, and then also, I think the other angle that I think is a very interesting discussion is made relevant by what happened in the final. So in the final, you had, again, a bizarre sort of, like, slow start by Zewu, and then he just had sort of, like, halves where he was really good. Actually, one of the weird things about Zewu in general, by the way, is he's not really the guy who does, like, the 2 kills a round. He's the guy who does, like, a 4K and a 3K and then nothing for 2 rounds, you know what I mean? Like, and in the end, it still averages out as a bag of number, but you do watch the game, and it depends which rounds he does that on. So if you see how good Mezzi was in that final, that's what I think really can start the discussion of who is the best team ever. Because if we forget the trophies and the stats for a second, and we just look at how they play CS. I think the most OP thing right now in Vitality, logically, role for role, is having Mezzi right now. This is a guy who in 2 straight major finals has basically, like, outfrag the opponent, bro. And actually, if you see, he does everything, mate. Win a clutch, get a key entry, fucking win aim duels, big frag in big finals, play up under pressure. That's where you can start to also compare them to Astralis, because everyone used to say in Astralis, remember that famous line where they were like, Zipnix is so underrated, but because we all said it for 4 years, I had to start saying, well, eventually you become overrated if everyone says that all the time. And so, but the point was, if you looked at all their rivals, how many of them had a Zipnix? Some people had a player as good as Device or better. Some people maybe had, like, I'll give you an example. If you had like Simple and Electronic and Na'Vi, you could argue they might be better than Device and Dupree. But the difference is, if you went to Na'Vi and you went down the roster, you got to like old washed Edward, or you got to like doesn't really like fucking perform that well, streaky, flamey. If you went to Astralis, every player was like a quality performer, play their role. Also, they don't just play like Falcons has this problem. They have on paper excellent players, but they don't all fit together, or you hope it works out in a game. That the thing that makes Vitality in this conversation, I agree with you. If you want to make the case, you can make the case, is even just qualitatively, mate, the style of how they work together, the pieces. I also think it's one of the best roster constructions I've ever seen, mate.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that. I think, like, I dived into it as well. I just had to remind me as well, because I was getting curious to, like, what do I actually think, you know, when you compare Astralis to Vitality, and what is it that makes them each unique? I think for Vitality, I think the build-up to where they got was different in the sense that it almost felt like Astralis came out of nowhere. Like, for a long, long time, Astralis was known to be chokers in the semifinals, quarterfinals, and no one ever anticipated that team to all of a sudden go and dominate everything, right? You remember when Magis came into the team, Cabri left the team after the major as well, it was like, oh, they're not going to be as great anymore. Would Cabri leave a team? Yep. You know, so it was sort of like the expectations of Astralis were that, yes, they are a great team, they'll be, you know, in top fours, they will win tournaments throughout the year, but they will never dominate, you know, and boom, all of a sudden they went on to dominate the scene for almost a year. I think for Vitality, the build-up was a bit different. I feel like everyone had an inkling feeling, you know, where the landscape was at, you know, when Robs got into Vitality, that could be the golden signing, right? We knew Vitality was already great. With Sphinx, they played half a year where Sphinx wanted to leave the team, Apex didn't want to play with him, you know, we heard it between the lines that there was some difficulties winning the Vitality camp, and even in that 6 months, they still went to semifinals, they still won a trophy, if I'm not mistaken, and they still got deep into tournaments. So we kind of knew that with Robs coming into it, it was sort of like, it was building up to a point where, oh, now we see Vitality in full force. So I think if that's an argument, or if that's something you value, you know, that maybe came out of nowhere, you know, for Astralis, and that they had to overcome a bit more adversity, you know, because I know when Cabri left the team back in the day, that was a shock to everyone. Like, it was a shock to the entire Astralis organization. It kind of caught them off guard, as far as I'm aware. They knew an hour before the press conference with North, you know, when that happened, the players didn't know, they felt betrayed, et cetera, et cetera. And if anything, in Denmark, that's always been described as, that was the moment when Astralis, you know, moved close on the bus, sort of, with, you know, that's what made them actually achieve the next level. I'll say it like this, you know, because I think for me, the discussion has to be, who do we say have had the best year ever in Counter-Strike? Like, we take 2018 as an example for Astralis, we take 2025 as an example for Vitality. I think it's hard for me to not say Vitality if you isolate it to a year. But I think
we've got enough trophies and stuff. I think they get it, mate.
Yeah, but the thing for me is that there was two majors in 2018. I don't know why people keep saying there was one. You know, there was the Boston major and there was the London major. They obviously won the London major, but in Boston, they finished 12th to 14th, got knocked out in the group stage by Cloud9. You know, Vitality won two majors in the same year. So already by now, you know, yes, Astralis had 10 trophies, Vitality had 9 trophies.
By the way, I've got an angle for you there as well. I will totally agree. I consider the Astralis era, when they got Magisk a few months after that, and then it goes into early 2019. So technically, it's like not actually a calendar year. It's 12 months. But here's one thing I'll just say to everyone listening. If you dare make that argument, then fuck off with your HLTV top 20s. Because do you know why? Kenny S was never number one, guys. Because he didn't do it over a specific calendar year. He was like the best in like the latter part of 2014, then the early part of 2015. But that wasn't a calendar year. So that's why I think his best is like fucking sixth or something mental, mate. Like, that the point is, it's not as neat as that. So, like, we're just doing what I think is fair, which is, it's the end of the year now, so we obviously can't know what Vitality will do beyond this. We're just taking this year, and yes, it's neater, because as we actually discussed at the beginning of the episode, we have actual seasons now. We have proper breaks. There used to be one player break back then, and all, like, there was, like, the bit, like, it wasn't even technically counted as a player break for Christmas, I believe, but that was just a week or two off at the end of the year where there was no tournaments. Like, the player break was in, like, July, August. So, even though I understand it might seem like we're being unfair to Astralis, we're just doing the calendar year. We're doing it like HLTV top X list. Like, you can't go, yeah, but I was great in February. The list stops at fucking December. So he's being fair by doing that. We're not being unfair.
No, and I think that's an important note, right? Because that was the one argument I could find for Astralis. If we were to crown them, you know, the best team ever, and in that regard, it was that they continued their dominance.
Yeah, exactly.
Early 2019, right? Yeah. I just looked it up as well. They had 18 tournaments in a row where they went into 18 grand finals in a row. They lost some of them, apart from one in Cologne. I think it was Cologne 18 where they finished in
semis.
In the semifinal, yeah, exactly, where they didn't make the grand final. So they had 17 out of 18 tournaments played where they went into the grand final. And obviously that streak of tournament is unheard of. That's never going to be replicated.
By the way, think about that as well. Same scenario, Pimp. Oh, yeah, I had a bad day today. Oh, shit, hard day at the office, honey. Yeah, just came second. Like, bro, think about I'm not saying this to be mean to you, mate. I actually think you were a very good player. I think about people like you and my mate MSL when they're in North. Man, making the finals and losing is like a good tournament. What are you talking about? Like, for a normal pro, that's excellent. So the idea that, like, oh, that's my bad day is I lose in the finals. That is goated shit.
That's how I always get shut down, you know, because if you go into my HLTV profile, it says zero trophies, right? So I have apparently nothing to show for. Right. I think I lost like 3 or 4 grand finals, 3 of them against NIP when they were on their fucking streak, you know, winning 71 games in a row or whatnot. So what was I supposed to do back then, you know? But that's just the way it is. So I think if we quantify it to 2018 versus 2025, I think for me the big difference is also the way Vitality did it in, because I really respect, you know, a team, as you said, they kind of pick the tournaments instead of just going to every single tournament and maybe risk getting burned out by the end of the year, which would have meant they probably wouldn't have won the major, you know. They took their breaks mid-season. They skipped certain tournaments where I would have loved to see them in some of the PGL tournaments, or at least go to one of them and win a PGL tournament and be like, you won in all circuits. Maybe you went to the Star Ladder tournament as well too. That's something I personally would have done as a team, you know. Star Ladder hosted a tournament in Budapest basically as a pilot, you know, 3 months before the major. I never understood why Na'Vi was the only team doing that.
Like, you go there, get a sense of what it's like, what you can do. Yeah, I get what you mean, like a preview for the major.
You stay in the same hotel, you play at the same PCs, you play with the TO, figure out do they work with shuttles, you know, tournament. It gives you a comfort feeling, you know. So I would most definitely have done that if I was some of the teams. But then again, VIS Punch, yada, yada, yada. They didn't go to them. They didn't farm any tournaments. So I feel like the fact that we can talk about Vitality winning 9 quality trophies, winning 2 majors within the same year, also winning a Grand Slam as well. That was, you know, one of the arguments brought up, you know, that Astralis won an Intel Grand Slam. And yes, they did. But true. So did Vitality.
Yeah.
They matched him in that regard. I'm running out of arguments as to why. Results-wise, I think Vitality have had a better year.
I think the resume works.
Exactly. And I think that's where we can, at least that's where I would enter a discussion, because I'm pretty certain I feel Vitality's year, you know, in terms of results, managing the calendar, et cetera, that's a stronger year than Astralis. And that is excluding the fact that, and that's the point I want to make here as well, like excluding the fact that, yes, it was a different time in 2018, and I fucking may be biased, you know, in terms of my own playing career, but 2 things I always get told is that I have 0 trophies won, so I must be a bad player. So was, you know, Santeros up until a couple of months ago. The second thing I'm being told all the time is that, yeah, but in 2014, 15, 16, everyone sucked at playing Counter-Strike. What those fucking idiots don't understand, and it goes for all sports history, whether it's basketball, football. When we played in 2014, we gave it 100% of what we knew was 100%, right? It was always giving it the most we know how to do. And then obviously the game evolves, you get better, you get smarter, you get better tools, you get analytical tools like Refrag or Skybox, yada, yada, yada. So yeah, the level will increase like you see in all other sports. You know, football today is a tactical nightmare if you come in and you want to play in Manchester City under Pep Guardiola.
Yeah.
Whereas 20 years ago, you'd just run around and you do whatever the fuck.
No, mate,
you
if you took some legendary football team from the 90s that's playing that beautiful Counter-Strike, your joke would be, I'm not even trolling, there are like mid-table Premier League teams who would have the modern tactical concepts, like, right, they have 2 midfielders, so we put 3 in midfield and crowd them at the category. That would happen. It sounds mad, but that's actually how the sport changed. Same thing as what you're saying. Here's what they never do, Pimp. The argument they use against you applies to every other player. So I'll give you an example. By their logic, you're way better than Kogu ever was. Spawn, what are you talking about, Pimp? That was years before. But they'd never make that argument, you notice. They only use that against you now. And in fact, this is the one, if you were an Astralis fan, that you should never make. Because guess what? 2018 was 7 years ago. So by that logic, Astralis is nowhere near Vitality. Vitality does it today when it's the hardest level. I mean, we've all just seen at the fucking major, this team's at stage 1, have killers on their squad, mate. Players that are like way more battle tested, been in way more tournaments than anyone had in 2018. Like, you had to be top 10 to have a chance to beat a good team back then. I think that's underrated.
I think it's underrated too, and it's an argument I don't buy into, because I always feel like, and that's my way of simplifying it, like 100% is always 100%. I don't care if you gave 100% in 2018 or if you gave 100% in 2025. Like, that, you're giving it your all at the moment, and you're giving it your all in terms of being the best at the moment. Like, what's the point of, dare I say, like, if you imagine it, you know, you gave 115% in 2018, if you were like, where would the extra 15% come from, right? They didn't exist back then. You didn't have the tools to be better. You didn't have the know-how, et cetera, et cetera. So this whole, like, yeah, but they did it in a more competitive era, that will be a forever argument. And that just means that when a team in 2030, you know, when FaZe gets their shit together and assembles a new team and dominate a season, then we'll look back in Vitality 2025. But yeah, you know, it wasn't that competitive back then.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't that, like, I hate that, because then you just diminish history in every aspect of it. So I don't buy into that. What I will say, though, that, and I'll get to the point now, I think if I were to make an argument, you can look at the results, you can look at the trophies won, I'd side towards Vitality. I think in terms of having the most complete team and who were quote unquote the better team, I'd say Astralis was more well-rounded. I think their structure and the players in their position, you know, pound for pound, was probably better. You know what I mean by that is that, yes, you obviously have Saibu, that is the outlier within Vitality, that is a superstar, that is arguably the best player in the world, that could be in contention for that. Astralis never had that. You know, Device was up there, but always outshined by Simple, even by Saibu when he came along, etc., etc. I think in terms of having Glaive as an in-game leader, I would still say peak Glaive is better than what I've seen peak Apex be. And I think that's my go-to, and I may be biased because I played with Glaive, but as I've said, you know, I even played with Apex. I played two LAN tournaments with Apex, and I know that's many years ago. That was when Overdrive bought us tickets to go to Finland and play a LAN tournament with him. So it was me, Kenius, Snyder, and someone else, you know, and then Overdrive, who was just a bot next to us, and we had to play with him. So I know Kenius very well, Apex very well from those times. We even talked a couple of times about making teams together, because we used to like each other and the play style. So I have a pretty good sense of both of them, and I'd still say that Glaive is superior in his way of thinking. Like, no one has ever had the mind for Counter-Strike Glaive had back in the day, not even Apex. Maybe that's changed today. Maybe Apex is a different guy and he's found another level in that regard. Obviously, I don't know. But from speaking to people who's played with Apex, it doesn't sound like he has that, you know, sixth sense for it that is unexplainable. He's just a very hard worker and very good at creating teams and creating an environment where people perform in, which obviously is a great skill set to have. I think Sipnix, when you compare him to Messi in the same role, Sipnix is better than Messi. I know Messi's has done great, and I think Messi should be, you know, awarded. You made the point that he's always stepping up actually in the bigger games and at the majors, and, you know, if anything, plays better instead of falling through. So there's a lot about that. But I think Sipnix was the best in his role ever, you know, to make it, and the most complete player. Same for Magis, you know, same for Dupuy. I think the entries in that regard, you take Dupuy, prime Dupuy versus prime Flamesy. I think right now Apex is sort of like working with less and getting more out of it. So I think to some degree, I would almost argue that Glaive had a better team to work with, you know, to get those results, whereas I feel like Apex have more, I can't say flaws in the players around him, but I don't consider Flamesy to be anywhere near the level of Peak Dupuy. And I don't think Rubs is significantly better than Magisk in terms of output. So if I were to engage a discussion, I would say that I would probably lean towards saying Astralis were the better team in a sense, you know, or had the potential to maybe argue that they were the better team or the more well-rounded team in a sense, whereas Vitality, and that speaks to how great of an achievement it is, maybe had to work a bit harder for it. You know, yes, they have great synergy. Yes, they have players in all the positions that make sense, but how big of a role did Flamesy play in winning this major? Obviously a big role, but did he play as big of a role as Dupuy in most of the tournament wins for Astralis? I don't think so, you know. So where Vitality gets a lot of their, you know, extra power is from Saibu being, you know, a top three player in the world, something Astralis never had to the same degree with Device. So if you look at pure, you know, who had the better chemistry, who had the better game plan, who had the better teamwork, et cetera, at the time being, I would probably lean towards Astralis.
Right, I'll do a quick rundown like that. So first of all, I actually don't think the Glaive Apex one is that interesting a discussion right now, and here's the reason why. Because actually Apex, if anything, is doing it more like a Carrigan. He'll even tell you this. When they won the first major, Blast Paris, one of his actual epiphanies for real was, I'm trying to play like what I learned in French CS, but French CS had people like existence and it was all tactical and shit. And what he realized was, if you have an international roster with people speaking second language English, you probably want to play more like a Carrigan's Fears and play a bit up tempo and a bit loose and sort of let people go to work. So as a result, that's one of the reasons why, if anything, the interesting thing about Apex in season one, at least, was when he would frag, because he has the space to do it. He has the positions to do it. Whereas for Glaive, it really is the traditional IGL role. And I don't think a pure tactical Counter-Strike, anyone ever did it the same way. because I think people like Carrigan and Apex aren't even playing that game. They're playing more like the analogy would be Glaive is like a Pep Guardiola figure, whereas they're more like some like Ancelotti or Mourinho-esque type guy where it's more like, you know, you trust the players and you just try to like put them in the right positions and you give a little tweak here and there and you make a call, but otherwise you're letting brilliant players do what they do. Then if you go, so I'll give Glaive it over Apex easy. I think the Zipnix over Messi one is easy. It's mainly just these massive ones that he's performed in. Zipnix's level tournament to tournament was very, very high. I would say, I personally would take Rops over Magus. We can have a debate about that one, it's fine. I think the more interesting one is this. This is one of the areas in Counter-Strike that I think we have a massive problem. It's the same problem that exists in football, right? In football, the logic goes, the player who scores the more goals is better than the player who has less goals. But that's just, you're a better goal scorer. That doesn't actually mean you're a better player. Like to me, maybe you score a few less goals, but you might be like fantastic at some other area. Maybe you're like a defensive player or you can fucking cross the ball or something. So my analogy here would be, Zero certainly frags harder than Device. I'll give you that all day long. But the difference is, people forget that a Device, before they won, and at the very beginning, still had a bit of chalk in him. The last sort of like, in 2018 and 2019, he was money in the bank more. Mm. Like, if you put this guy in any big game, yeah, he won't frag as hard. But first of all, he actually does what people tell me Ziwu does. Like, oh, he's so unselfish, he just want to play for the team. Mate, sometimes he just has rounds where he does nothing. That is being selfish. Like, you know, being unselfish, we do your fucking job. Device, I always said to me, he must be the coach's dream. I've never seen a star player that looked like they did everything you asked from them, had no diva shit. They never looked like they forced the game. I don't think Device ever told them, like, give me the hero. That never happened, bro. But he still fragged every time he got the weapon. He still did exactly as much as he needed. So I think, yeah, I would say Zero was slightly better than Device, but I think it's closer than people realise because of the other elements of the game. I think also Device fit his team better than any star maybe ever in the history of Counter-Strike. And that isn't just that they worked around him. He also worked around them. If you remember, one of the things, if you were Glaive, was Device was like, as an AWPer, studying the demos of the other guy, and he was sort of like making his own little mini calls too. I always thought that was amazing. And so to me, and obviously, by the way, I think the quickest one of all time is, I'm sorry, Flames, Dupree is better than you, and you have yet to show me that. You actually are, like Pimp said, the player that I've literally seen in some of these finals, just have maps where you did nothing. But hey, you know what? Good luck, good job. You're in the best team of all time, maybe, mate. So you got to win anyway. And also, I agree with what you said at the beginning. The difference is, the reason why Vitality, in theory, could beat or win any tournament ever is because, yeah, they can have crazy firepower. I mean, you saw in this final, three of their players were, like, competing with each other for the MVP award. Like, hey, let me have a go. Let me get in here. Like, that's fucking nuts. But the difference is, if you want to talk about a team, like one unit that exists as a single hive mind and moves around the map, it's the reason why it took so many years after Astralis when players came out, Device went out, and then fucking this player went out, and then Dupree left. That's why it took so many years before people could even start to figure out who even did what in the team. Like, was it just Glaive? Was it just that Device was the MVP? Did Zonic do it all? People had a hard time telling because they were just so blended together. I could watch Vitality and I can see what people are doing. I can see who's the sick Harper who does it this way. Rops has to win the clutch and take care of the late round. Fucking Flames has to have the odd T side where he just gets like 10 entries and then you're going to win that match. Also, there's another thing, mate. People don't bring this up. You can also, with both of them, I think those two teams have the two best map pools ever. And we're not talking about just that thing where you just had the best win rate. I mean, you look at how they play the maps. Like, bro, think about this for a second. That overpass that they almost 12-0'd from T-side in the deciding map of a final of a major, that's not even close to their best map, Pimp. That's some shit at the edge of their map pool that they only play if forced to, basically. Like, this is fucking nuts. They also, remember last season, the first season when Anubis was in the pool, and that was, in theory, their weakest map. I can tell you, the Eternal Fires and Auroras and Mongols of the world thought, oh, we're going to test them on this map all day long. And just all lost most of the time, except that opening series you referenced at Blast Bounty. Aside from that, Vitality would still win. So I also think they both have, again, this is the other part that you can put them as the best ever. They would all match up well in a match, mate. This would be the tightest match if you could really create it in some parallel time dimension where they can exist at the same time. It would be the best match ever in theory.
I agree. I think it's obviously like in as a thought experiment, it would be super sick to recreate that match and see how that would fare out. And in all honesty, it's impossible to have an idea of the outcome. But I think in terms of the map pool, I think that's something I spend a little time thinking about. I actually don't know what team I think have the better map pool, because I think one of the underrated things about Astralis, not underrated things, one of the things we know was obviously the nuke streak, where they were basically unbeatable on certain maps. And Vitality have never had a map where they were quote-unquote unbeatable. They had a streak on Dust 2, I think 14 games or 15 games.
They had an Infernal streak 2 in Season 1.
The Inferno 1 as well, yeah. You know, so technically unbeatable, yeah. But Astralis had the nuke record, you know, which was just, yeah, that was true. Like the notion that every time you played Nuke, you knew you were going to lose. Whereas I even feel like teams, when they were playing Vitality on Dust 2 and even on Inferno, they feel like, ah, oh, we got close, or we could beat them, or Mouse had a couple of goes at them, you know, where they would still be okay with playing Inferno against Vitality. So I think there was a bit more fear going up against Astralis, yes, and their map pool. The best example I can give you was during the major here in the semifinal, where Spirit played Vitality. For the year, for 2025, Vitality had played Dust 2 34 or 35 times now. I don't remember after the grand final. 34 times, let's say that. And they won 30 of those games and had a period of a streak with 15 wins in a row, right? So if you win 30 out of 34 games in those two, that's your map, you know. That you are the best team in the world on that map, regardless of what period you're looking at throughout the year. Spirit picked Dust 2 against Vitality, right? So if you go into a semifinal at a major, and the best thing you can do, you know, with your map pool is picking what arguably is the greatest streak a team has ever had on Dust 2, and you're like, this is our home map, this is where we come back into the game, then you're fucked. Like, then you know that your map pool must be the strongest in the world, and that's a great case for Vitality. And I know that depends, obviously, that, yeah, Spirit feel that great on Dust 2 as well. It's one of their stronger maps, and sometimes you want to prioritize playing your own strong maps, and then you just have to prove that you're better than the opposition. But I feel like if you're a team heading into a semi-final at a major, like, your map pool must be pretty strong too, right? You must be pretty good as well. So if the best place you can go is to an all-time great streak against a team like Vitality on a map like Dust 2, then you're fucked. So I think there's different ways to think about the map pool, where I feel Astralis had that guaranteed one-up map, you know, more often than not in a lot of these tournaments, which obviously helps when you're playing best of threes. And that's another note as well. I don't remember, but I want to say it back off my hunch. I think Vitality played more best of five grand finals than my Astralis.
Oh, easily. You remember there was barely any best of fives back then, Pimp.
I think it was a couple, you know, but maybe that's it.
It was just Starlights and stuff as far as I remember. And the odd IEM, like maybe ESL Pro League or something, but there wasn't many. Every single tournament now is BO5 final, except the Boston Major.
Yeah, exactly. And that's not to say that, again, that's kind of counterintuitive to my argument before. Like, Astralis could only win what they were up against.
Yeah, of course.
It's not their fault that it wasn't best of five grand finals. But to see Vitality do it, you know, in best of five grand finals, to do it in different variations as well. You remember the one in Melbourne against Falcons, where they technically lost the game, right?
Yeah, they had in Spirit.
In Spirit, they were done, and somehow, some way, find a way to win. In Lisbon, against Mouse Sports, they win the first map 13-0 on Inferno. Yep. Then they go on to lose two maps in a row, and they're down 2-1.
Well, they got 13-0 or something, didn't they? I think they got clapped on. Or maybe they did that on the first one. Maybe 13, it was them who 13-0.
They did a 13. Yeah,
okay, and then they lost the next Mouse, okay.
Then I think they lost 13-2 on the second.
Something like that, yeah.
Just turned around, yeah. So I think, like, and that's all... That's all recent, you know. I remember that very, very well. I don't remember every single Astralis final or how they did it, you know. But I think the way I want to put it is that map pool-wise, it did feel like teams feared the map pool of Astralis a bit more on specific maps, you know, Nuke as an example. Whereas I think most teams look at Vitality now and they go into every video thinking, it doesn't matter where we go, like, we're getting smacked, you know. We can go this map, we can go that map, we're fucked, you know. So the 2-0 potential when you go up against Vitality is so high that even if they are dropping a map, you know, where they look a little bit lackluster, like they did against FaZe in the final, where they looked like shit on Nuke for some reason, you know. And FaZe, they didn't come up with anything new. Like, FaZe played Nuke the same way in all playoff games that they did in the final against Vitality as well. High paced, out of spawn calls, you know, having twist drop down gate into main, you know, do the inner split. Like, you saw it telegraphed, you know. They just couldn't stop it. So that's credit to FaZe for playing at a high level on Nuke, but also Vitality, they have had a habit, you know, of sometimes losing focus, losing a map, but cost their map pool over the course of all six maps that they play often is so goddamn strong, where it's very hard to say that that's the best map, that's the second, that's the third. It felt like all six maps are almost equally good. You would always, even if you stole away a map from Vitality, you would end up losing the game, you know, in a best of five grand final or in a best of three game. So I think that's where I would differentiate the two map pools. That for me, for my money, Astralis had that one or two maps, you know, Nuke being one of them, where you just knew you're going down 0-0 regardless of how you played. Whereas everyone felt they can, on a good day, beat Vitality on a certain map, but they would have to play their A game three maps in a row in order to win a game. And that's just not feasible when you went up against Vitality.
The one thing I'll say, because by the way, I hope the point that we've actually elucidated here is, because I'm with you. For the year, I think Vitality had the better year. I think Astralis, I give the slight nod, as the better team. And so
the better era, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe is a way to...
Yeah, if you add it, especially if you add it in the next few months, because we don't know what Vitality will do yet. So, no, the other thing as well for me is, I also just think they were a slightly better team, as in, like, the way they played the game and all that jazz. But the other thing I'll throw in there that actually is a point for Vitality is this. Another edge that Astralis had, though, in that era, and I think it's why certain maps actually, like Nuke, were unbeatable, was also that they were the first ones as a whole team to pioneer, like, the utility meta. So, essentially, they had, like, tech that no one else had mastered. It took a lot of teams a lot of time to break these demos down. Like, unfortunately, the margins are just too fine on things like that in Counter-Strike now. Like, you see teams, like, again, I'll use the same example. You could see teams in Stage 2, bro, that throw, like, all the best Molotovs and know the smoke counters and stuff. And people have just sort of learned, like, the correct protocols of what you do against utility, etc. It's actually why Inferno got a lot more boring, because the banana's just, like, a fucking... Like, people saw some, like, think of the Na'Vi Furia match. The first 45 seconds were just too gets free smoke kills. Like, there wasn't even people fighting, no one could get in the banana. So, like, the game is a bit different in that sense. So, and I think it's a good angle. It's a good angle, right? There was one other thing, though, is this. Obviously, the strength of Glaive was he was playing chess while everyone else was playing checkers. Now, I don't know who plays checkers online, but if you want to play auto chess, a type of auto battler, then check out Mechabellum, which is a game that has been published by Game River. By Dreamhaven, made by Game River, and it's a tactical auto battler where you have like a mechanized army and you battle your opponents. If you don't know how auto battlers work, they're basically like strategy games, but you don't have the actual like APM, you don't have to move around a micro, you just pick the units, and it's more like a trading card game, you know, where you put like Magic the Gathering, like, I put this beast out there and it does this attack to you, and it's more like the tactics of what card are you going to play and can you counter that and do you understand the tactic. And what's cool is we're actually doing a partner tournament as LFN with this company, where on Saturday, December the 20th at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, which is 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time in Europe, 4 p.m. Central European Time, there will be a 5-hour 2v2 ladder tournament, and it will be of people like you, fans, and people like me, hosts of LFN. So it's a 2v2 tournament. It will run for roughly 3 hours on the official ladder, and then if you qualify, I probably won't, you will then have like the semis and the finals, which means it'll be a bit longer after that. The top performing teams get invited into a 4-team semi-final bracket, which will be broadcast on stream. Every player who plays will receive in-game rewards with a $500 prize pool and more in-game rewards offered to top performing teams. And everyone who participates at all and all LFN fans can receive a free in-game holiday reward if they use the code LASTFREENATION, all one code. So if you want to enter this tournament, obviously you've got to go quickly now. It's coming up on Saturday. Go to the LFN Discord. It'll be in the description of this video. Register in the Mechabellum channel. We will track your wins on a custom API-powered leaderboard. And in order to participate, share your Steam username and friend code in Discord. And by the way, since it's a 2v2 tournament, if you're looking for someone to be the other person in the two, you don't have a mate to play with, then you can actually just go into like the Mechabellum team channel there and ask someone, do you want to play with me in this tournament? It's mainly for fun. And then finally, there'll even be coaching sessions on Discord, I think like the day before or something, to help people who are new to the game like figure out the concepts. And also, by the way, I did see, if you go on YouTube, Grobby, the legendary Warcraft 3 player, has played a fuck ton of this, and he has a bunch of videos that like help you get into the game. So come and join LFN hosts and fans for some fun competition in Mechabellum this holiday season. Play in our 2v2 tournament on December the 20th to have a chance to win $500 in cash alongside in-game rewards. Use code LASTFREENATION in Mechabellum to earn a special holiday themed in-game reward. Viewers who tune into the live stream will have a chance to win random reward keys by being active in the chat as well. And if you haven't tried Mechabellum yet, it's 40% off on Steam until January 5th. So jump in, and I will be there on Saturday. I don't actually think I'll be good. I haven't played any fucking games like that in my life, mate. But I just don't care. I thought I'd fucking do it. Whatever. That's another thing people don't know. I've always said this about those show matches. TOs were just intimidated to ask me to play in them, mate. I would have played in every single one. And I don't give a fuck about looking bad. I'm not going to do like the Bardolph thing where you're bad and you try to pretend you're really good. Like, I would just fucking play, mate, and go for some kills. If you get a kill, you get a kill. Okay, I thought another topic, an obvious one this brings up. You know what drove me crazy, Pimp? I'm so bored of this thing we do in sports and esports where we just make it like a movie. So everyone kept telling me, oh my God, Spirit versus Vitality in the semis. The winner of this match is the player of the year. Like, a BO3! You don't know it's player, right? They don't even have the same teams. It's not tennis. It's not like this isn't like the grand finals and they've each won 10 titles and whoever gets this one. So if it's a 1v1 sport, you could say it. So I think that's madness. I think the more interesting discussion is this. First things first, I think a bit like last year, you could make an interesting debate among three players. This year, if someone says to me, Donk is the best player of the year, then I would say that's a valid opinion. If someone says to me, Simu is the best player of the year, I'd go, that's also a valid opinion. I think this year, those are the only two I would consider, really. But I don't think there is a wrong answer, because I think the answer actually just says, what do you prefer about Counter-Strike? Now, I will throw one last wrinkle in, which is, I don't want to ask Pimp who HLTV will put as number one, because then people know the discussion becomes, are we counting MVPs? Is it about winning the trophy? Like, some of these things clearly do matter to HLTV. I just want to know this question. If you have to pick for 2025 who the best player was, who does Pimp take?
Donk, without a question of doubt.
What are the reasons? Go on.
I think it comes down to the question you asked and how specific you asked the question. Because if you ask me, who do I think is the best player in the world? Who do I think is the most skilled, the guy with the most influence, the guy who amazes me or impresses me the most whenever he plays Counter-Strike, and the guy with the most impact on the server, regardless of what team he's on, what tournament is that, what stage at a tournament you're in, then I would say Donk. You know, I don't even think, and that's crazy because Saibu is having some fantastic numbers outside of the fact that he has all these trophies and two majors and MVPs, you name it. I think Donk is having an all-time great season as an individual Counter-Strike player right now. I think the stats back it up. I think even more so if you care to watch him play, if you care to follow Spirit as a team as well. I said it many, many times. I got a lot of flack for it in... Was it Katowice this year or before that? Where I said, like, I think Donk is the only player right now in the world who's able to mask all the flaws of his team. I don't think there's ever been a player who's so good that he can make any team. And I think Donk could do that. I think Donk could. And this is just a theoretical, you know, line of thought. I think Donk could go to any team and he could make the team look like a good team, you know, because he would mask so many of the underlying issues that may or may not be there. And whenever we saw Spirit struggle, especially heading into the major where they had 5-6 tournaments where they didn't make a top four, it was also, funnily enough, the period where Donk only posted a 1.3 rating on average, only posted 1.28, 1.25. Yeah, something like that, you know.
That's so crazy, right? Though, the number, only 1.3, but it is
only 1.3, because his average for the year is
Of course.
145 or 1. Yeah, like, it's true. Fucking crazy. So I feel like that confirmed at least my suspicion that what we've seen from Spirit all year, a team that won Cologne, a team that won the Blast Bounty Season 2 in Malta, a team that actually won quite a lot of trophies. I think Maui would even argue that they are his second best team of the year because they actually won stuff instead of just coming second like Maus throughout the entirety of the year, or Falcons for that matter. Personally, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think there's other teams in contention at least, but the player Donk, he made a team with a lot of flaws seem like the perfect team at times. And I have never ever in my life seen a player outside of Simple at times, you know, do that. And I think Donk does it more consistently than Simple did even in his prime days in Na'Vi. I think what we're seeing right now is an all-time individual great season from a player that is Donk. And I think even more so, you know, and I don't often do this because I don't really care what players think, but when you interview players, when you talk to players, whether that's off-cam, on-cam, you know, they also have experience practicing against Donk. I don't think there's ever been a player that has so much respect for his abilities that Donk has right now. It used to be the same with Simple. Everyone would go like, yeah, Simple, obviously the best player in the world. You know, he's going to be the GOAT, or he is the GOAT, depending on what year you asked him. Everyone had that, you know, respect for the player, knew that he was just something special. I sense the same now, just to a higher degree. Like, everyone know when they play against him, when they watch him play, when they look at his statistics, it doesn't matter. They feel... Donk is that player, you know, he's going to, you hear them all say he's going to be the GOAT. Maybe he's not the GOAT now because he's only played for a year and a half or 2 years, but he will be the GOAT. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
He's the player we respect the most. He's the player that we fear the most. He's the player that single-handedly can win a game regardless of how bad the players around him are playing. I don't think Saibu had the same ability, and he hasn't shown that he had that ability with Vitality this year. It's not been a lot of tournaments where I felt like, ooh, Saibu carried Vitality to win right here. It was all part of the system, just like Device did back in Astralis. And that's not to take anything away from Saibu, because I think he's a fantastic player. I think, as you said, like, there's no wrong answer to this, but if you ask me who is the best player, the most influential player, and who's the most skilled, like, who is the best player in the Simple War question that is, then I have no problem saying Donk, and I'd even say by quite some margin.
Yeah, what we'll do is, it's called counterpoints. We'll do the same thing. I'm actually going to take Donk as well, so I'll give my Donk reasons, but then we'll try and find like other angles for Z, like you referenced a little bit there. So first of all, I'll tell you one of the most immediate areas that immediately leaps out to me, and this is, I think, a really good contrast. So I'll just give you a role angle, which I think people miss, because again, one thing we're doing here that does make it tricky is we're not comparing two players who say they play the same position. What made the simple versus Zewu and technically even device argument great was they were all primary AWPers that typically, look, they AWP differently, but they're all primary AWPers. In theory, they even like playing the same game in the same way at the same time, right? The problem here is Donk and Zewu aren't particularly similar in terms of their role whatsoever, aside from the fact they shoot a lot of people. They're really good at the game. Like, Zewu's sort of like the pack player on T-side. Sometimes he takes the rifle on the certain map. Donk is basically only rifle, except he does the odd secondary AWPing now just for like memes or something. But generally, he's just the opening slash playmaker player aggressively on the T-side. Here's an angle for you, right? That might sound like I'm using other players to argue for Donk, but I'll just put it this way, right? If you talk to Nero from HLTV, he will tell you that what makes Donk being insane in CS2 slightly different from, like, why wasn't there a super aggressive rifler in CSGO is the modern rating and CS2 combined, you could argue, do actually slightly favour aggressive riflers too. It does make it easier to do it. Like, put it this way, back in the day, I don't care how good, like, Fur or Forest were, it was very hard to be the number one player. There's a reason why it tended to be the more like late round, like Get Right or Cold Zero. That's the reason why they got the MVPs and they were considered the better player. I think the game just favoured their style more. So it's true, Donk's not doing quite like what couldn't be done in CSGO. Like, you just, there wasn't an option for it. And I'd like to see those players play CSGO and vice versa, by the way. I'd love to see him in CSGO and see what he'd do there. But put it this way, if I ask you, at their peak this year, is it comparable between like Monacy and Zewu? I think that's a pretty fair comparison, especially if you go about a month and a half ago. The difference is, tell me the rifler that actually competes with Donk. Now, in theory, the joke is, it's like, what, Nico, Zershin? Like, you have a hard time even naming them, bro. Like, nobody who plays that role is even considered as good as Donk. And even worse, bro, none of them are in the number one player of the year discussion. Every other player, like, the joke this year is, they might give Rops, like, the number three spot because of all the titles and the consistency. But again, in terms of star players, no matter what you think of him, Monacy probably could have snuck in there again. He'll probably be number four. Like, actually, we've seen very strong AWPers. That is their traditional role, to be number one in Counter-Strike for about 10 years at this point in time. So I already think it shows that no player playing Donk's role can come close to him. That's a massive edge to him. And quite frankly, I do think he might be the only player since like CS 1.6 with people like Forrest who ever played the aggressive rifle role who was the best player in the world. Because normally the downside of that role, it's why you don't see loads of Donk 1v6s. The joke is, think of the 1v5 he did. It's because he was trapped on Mirage T-side at the bottom of the fucking A steps. That's about the only time he'll ever get a 1v5 in his career, pimp. Because every other round, he's going to have done a 2 or a 3K and he's dead. And then he's watching Shiro and Zontix and whoever the fuck else going, please, with this clutch, I've done so much. It's why I actually totally understand his frustration on that Mirage game. It's like, bro, I do 3Ks and then Chopper loses a 1v2. What am I doing wrong here? What am I supposed to do a 4K? Like, that's fucking insane. So what's funny is, though, I also do think that's an underrated detail, which is, I think he has the greatest team impact of any player. It's like you just said there. Because actually, if anyone knows, one of the most useless stats ever that HLTV introduced was years ago. If you went to a team on a specific map, it has that stat and it goes, this is their win percentage when they get the opening kill. Spoiler, every good team is like 70%. Because guess what? When you're 5v4, especially on T-side, you have a massive advantage. Like, you have so many ways. You can move the defense. You have spread them out across the sites. Just have a numbers advantage when you fight them. You can brute force them, right? Who is the player who gives you the most fucking opening kit? It's Donk. Donk is, like, unbeatable in that area. And let's be real, the way he's an alien is he doesn't give you the opening kit. He gives you, like, the first two or three sometimes, bro. Like, he just does shit I've never seen anyone do. So that's why I know what you mean about masking the flaws. Because, bro, if you have a player who's almost a guaranteed opening kill or 2K, yeah, you will win fucking tons of games on that one. It's one of the reasons I do criticise people like Chopper. I'm like, bro, I don't think anyone has a bigger advantage going into a T round than you with the player you have. I don't even always buy that. Like, look, I do think you set him up and there's a tactic to to what you do. But some of those kills, no, that you're on some Nico kill shit if you pretend that's a tactic, bro. You couldn't really tell him, like, spray transfer the other guy's head. Like, that's just genius. No one could do that. So that's not what Zemu does. Zemu has a different style of game entirely. Then also, as you said there, I think that's another angle that's actually mental, is actually the fact that this is one of the only players I think every single team in the world would be better if you swap their aggressive rifler with Donk. You can't actually say that about Zemu. Again, if Falcons tomorrow had Zemu instead of Monacy, would the results even be different? You know what I mean? They'd be very similar, I'm pretty sure. It's just a stylistic comparison. If you took Donk, any team, by the way, the joke is even Falcons, bro. Take Kiyosuke or Nico and put Donk there. Bro, sit back, and if you hit Saudis, you're going to have a fucking bad time, mate. They're going to win a lot of tournaments, even with Kixar, even with Tessa Salva. Even if you think Zonic's a fraud, they will win a lot of tournaments, bro. Mouse, you can imagine fucking Donk in Zersian's position. They would be fucking tripping over majors. It'd be crazy. It'd be not so many. Almost every team, it's not that he'd play exactly the same, but I'll tell you what, they would be better. And then similarly, it's one of the reasons I always had for Simple, because I've always said it this way, and I don't even say it to be rude. It's I think it's actually just like who they are as people. Zemu lets the game come to him because he's a genius. And then what he does is he almost does play for fun in the game. He does what feels nice and what feels right. And he does think about, what do I think about this guy? Simple's mentality was, I don't care if you think I'm an asshole, I'm going to win this game. And that meant Simple did shit in Donk's fashion. I'll give you two examples. Remember the meta where on Nuke, the reason Na'Vi became unbeatable is Simple, almost like the most abusive like team captain ever, would just be like, right, they keep coming secrets. So you're not playing secret. I'm going there this round. You go to fucking upper. Like, Matt, a spot you don't even play. And then he would go to secret, and then they'd try and push secret, and then he'd kill three people. Then next round, he'd go, right, flamey, move off this position here or whatever. I'm going to, like, bottom floor on Nuke. And then they'd run out the hut, and he'd be there, and he'd no-scope two of them. And then he'd go, guy in the ramp, fucking rotate on. Right? In theory, by the way, if you weren't actually the GOAT, you'd be the biggest asshole ever for doing that. But I'll tell you what, it made it fucking a nightmare to try and win a game against this guy. Like, you couldn't do shit against him. Similarly, I remember when he first had his GOAT year, bro, he used to do some shit just for Zeus that also was like, mate, this isn't even tactics. I remember when they would play Train, I have seen Simple be the entry guy who jumps down the T-fucking ramp into lower sight with an AWP. Bro, the AWP never goes first there. You send another guy that jumps. In fact, you normally send two people in the site, then the AWP peaks to see the people shooting the guys. He would just go first and headshot you, or he would go with a fucking deagle first on mid of Mirage and try and shoot the guy at Connector. Like, these players, there's an impact that goes beyond stats, bro. Like, I don't care that we both got the same kill there, because maybe you got a kill in the pack and I got the opener like that. The impact of that kill, not only is it insane, no one else can do it. No one else could do it at the time. Simple did. No one could do it. And Doc does it now, mate.
Yeah, and he does it better than anyone has ever done it. You know, I'll back it up with stats because I agree. You know, I think...
By the way, that's also why this conversation for me is actually easier than people realise. I also think this is Donk's best year, and I don't think anyone had a better year than Donk now. So logically, if he's the best ever in a year, it might not be the GOAT overall, but for the year, I don't think anyone ever played a better year. So yeah, then he gets to be number one for me, obviously. That goes hand in hand with that.
Yep, no, I agree with basically everything you said. You know, just to back it up, you know, for people who still go like, maybe, you know, Donk is having, you know, as you said, I think he's having the best year Counter-Strike players ever had, you know, and if that doesn't qualify you to be the best player in the world of set years.
Exactly. What are we doing? Like,
it's a screwed conversation. Also, I just looked through what you were talking about here, because I wanted to statistically back it up as well. His role, as you said, I remember an example back in... When Nico had his, I think it was 2021, when Nico like finished the year by being the best rifler in the world.
Yeah.
You know? And there was it Saibu Simple? And then Nico came third, you know?
Yes.
And there was like even people, including myself, who at least begged the question, could we maybe sneak Nico into top two? Could he even be the best player in the world? Because doing what he did back then
Absolutely. With
a rifle was unheard of. Like that was one of the best rifle years any player's ever had before. And that was like, I think Nico finished the yearly rating at 1.22, you know, still 0.1, you know, behind Saibu and Simple. So obviously he didn't win, but I would even make the case that back then, and I know it was a different game in CSGO, and maybe the rating system favors aggressive rifles a bit more like Donk now, but still he came close, you know, just by being so dominant. Donk is shitting on Saibu, and he's shitting on everyone else right now per the numbers and per the stats. So if you watch him play, you see the impact. If you watch his stats, you see the impact. Also, I just looked at it, right? His entry rating, like that's why I would say that.
It's really bonkers, mate. It's really insane.
Crazy. For 2025, his entry rating is 136. He attempts, I think it's Let me just look so I get the number straight right here. Attempts 29% of his team's entry duels throughout the entirety of the year. So every third entry duel anyone is involved in for Team Spirit is Donk, you know. And that's not always easy to manage because sometimes you have teams who are just going to avoid Donk on the CT side. If they know he plays a certain position, they go somewhere else. And funnily enough, then Donk is not involved in it, right? So if you just exclude it to the T side, you have Donk being up there, you know, as one of the highest entry fraggers in the world. He succeeds with 62% of those duels, right? So in 62% of the cases, he's the one.
I hope people realize that would be crazy even for someone doing like 20%. 60 is impossible, bro. Even like 60. I always think Zantara's has a crazy stat. His is like 50 when he's really good, mate. And that's insane too. It's like 130 something maps, right? But that's the other thing as well.
140.
It's insane, isn't it?
And his rating, his entry rating, and the way, you know, HLTV calculates it is basically attempts versus success rate, etc., right?
Yes.
His entry rating for the year is 136. I just looked through 24, 23, 22, 21. No one in history of Counter-Strike has ever been above 113. Simple's best entry rating for a year was 128. Yekinda, prime Yekinda, who we all agree in his prime, you know, was probably the best entry factor in the game together with Dupree. None of them has ever had more than 128, you know. So not only is Donk right now having the best entry frag year, statistically speaking, ever by quite a margin, but he also does the clutching, he does the pistoling, he does it all. Like, he's impactful in every single aspect of the game. And if you even watch the body language from Spirit and you watch the timeouts, then yes, obviously Chopper's the caller, you have Harley behind them as well, but you would notice in a lot of those timeouts, a lot of them are looking towards Donk and they're asking, what do you want to do? Like, how do you want to approach the next round? Just like you described with Simple. He had that, you know, ability to be like, I play ramp this round, I play secret this round, I play inner, I'm going to push hot. Donk is in the same position where he can do whatever the fuck he wants because the team is fully aware of the fact that if he's successful, we're successful, right? Yes. So we're not going to try to hold him back at all. And to have that kind of impact, it's only ever been Simple. You described the device before.
Yes.
Fit perfectly into the system. Obviously, he would rotate around on the CT side, but he would do it within the system. He would do it in a way where players knew what to do when he would then come to his position, or he would do it in a bait setup, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas for Simple, as you described, and Donk now, they would literally just one certain round be like, okay, I have a feeling I need to go here. You fuck somewhere else, you know.
Yes.
This is my position now. And to have that kind of aura and that kind of impact, I've only ever seen it with Simple. And now I see it with Donk, and I think Donk does it better than Simple, even in his prime. So if that doesn't qualify you to have the best year, you know, of 25, and if that doesn't qualify you to be the best player in the world, then I can't really come up with another argument for his sake.
No, by the way, it's even why there's a detail that I understand if people weren't there, it'll get lost on them. I actually have seen fans saying, it's a totally valid question. Some fans I've seen who came along in the latter days, like during COVID, said, but I don't get it. If Simple only won the major in 2021, why did everyone say he was the GOAT in 2018? And it's like exactly what we're talking about. The whole point is that, like, literally after the 2018 year, it reminded me of this year with Donk, bro. Like, I watched it and I remember thinking, mate, if he did exactly the same mouse clicks, but I just upgrade his roster by like one piece, he wins like three or four more trophies. Like, he just gets a bunch more MVPs. Like, suddenly, like, this wouldn't even be a discussion. So how is it his fault that, like, that guy let the game down or fucked up on the T side of this one or whatever? Meanwhile, obviously, back then, someone like Device, he never had that happen because he had the best team around himself. So I do think that's the part people are missing. It's the same this year. As we just said, he's the only player, I think, Donk, that you could drop in any team and they'd be better. I also think he could be actually the best player in almost any team. And then also, this will be like a bit of a counterintuitive point to people, but the thing you said about the timeout, it's why I take this very, very differently than other people. I've told people this story back in the day. An area I think I actually had a positive influence on Simple is I actually think I did like a bit of mini coaching that people wouldn't think of. Normally, when you have star players, the reason you preach being unselfish is because naturally they're egotistical. Of course, they want to be comfortable and have the weapon they want and get the chance to kill. It's fun to kill people. They don't want to be the guy who has to like fucking watch a shit spot or give the AK to someone else. So normally you preach being unselfish because you just assume people are going to be selfish anyway. I told Simple, mate, I don't care if you're selfish. But I said, if you're selfish though, don't ever blame like the fourth best player on your team, the supportive element, if he can't like frag like you because he's not playing the same game as you. If you're being selfish, you're taking those resources, you're making demands. He probably has to give you the resources, by the way, and as a result, be a shitter player with the worst weapon and worst spot. So as a result, understand, you're not playing the same game. You would be like a fucking striker telling the defender, like, score more goals. It's like, his job isn't to score goals, mate. His job is to get the ball, pass it upfield, and then you get to score the goal. So in this analogy, I actually think in a weird way, I hate that fucking narrative around Z move that goes. He's unselfish and he doesn't make demands. Bro, think about what you just said. I'll make the same scenario. It's a timeout. It's a really close game in a massive final. And we all look to Ziwu because he's the best player, right? He's the number one player in the world. He's going to be our MVP. And we say, Ziwu, what are we going to do this round, mate? I imagine he would just be like, whatever you want. That doesn't sound cool anymore, mate. I actually want you to tell me, basically, like you would in football, give me the ball on the right-hand side, out the outside of the box, I'll do the rest, mate. That might sound egotistical, but I'll tell you what, there are players in football, I'll tell you, that's your fucking dream that the player says that. It's like, you know what, do what he said, give him the fuck. By the way, the story back in the day goes that Michael Jordan has literally said to people, that when they were like drawing up the final play, he said, just give me the ball, get the fuck out my way. Mate, if you're the shit player on that team, you're like, oh, thank God, we've got Michael Jordan, bro, I didn't know what we were going to do against like 3 seconds left and how do we get the defense, but he'll take care of that for me. Like, in a way, I think the same thing with Donk, and that's why I told you I never got that angle that people were mad at him for getting really frustrated after that map one. If you're not frustrated in that scenario, mate, like, what are we doing? Like, you gave it, he was dying on that fucking map, mate. He was doing everything he could, and I totally get, I fuck with that. I do think you can certainly be disrespectful with it. You can have a separate conversation about that, but in that moment, I think that's actually trying to fix something during a match and hope you then go on to win the bloody match. So, no, I think it's a very fair conversation. Also, I do think a lot of the Ziwu angles would be more device-esque angles. It would be things like, he does allow people room in the team. Yeah. He will swap to an AK when he thinks that he's not hitting his AWP shots, etc. There are things he does that I think are positives. The difference is, if you ask who the best player is, again, if an alien landed tonight and said CS is a 1v1 game, you will pick a champion to represent you, and if you lose, you die. I'm sorry, I'm not taking Ziwu. I can't take him having the fucking a day where he just doesn't feel it and he goes, and Apex isn't there to shout at him. Donk would murder everyone. I'm so sure I'm alive if I pick Donk, mate.
Yeah, that's actually why I have a question for you as well, because I'm curious, that whole like device notes, because that's what we have, right? We have another scenario of 2018, you remember, where Simple was obviously the best player in the world.
Yes.
He won the best player in the world per HLTV device. Yes. 2018, we just spoke about it, maybe the greatest year our team has ever had, you know, won a lot of MVPs. Agreed. Won the major, second best player of the year. Even back then, HLTV gave it to Simple, and they kind of had to, because I think everyone agreed that Simple was clearly the best player. I think we have the same scenario this year, but there's going to be a massive issue for HLTV, and that is that Saibu have won two majors and was MVP at both those majors.
I can just tell you, Pimp, I'm not being rude at all. I will be extremely shocked if they give it to Donk. I think their whole history, because another thing is, they actually do count. If you ever read those articles, people don't do this, mate, they just look at the list. They write all articles, guys, giving you all the reasons why, and at the end, they tell you which stats they picked. You can just disagree like me, but I'll give them props. At least they explain their reasoning. They absolutely do care about things like MVPs, EVPs, and so I'm sorry, Donk can't have as many MVPs because he wasn't in Vitality. That's just true.
Yeah, and not even EVPs because Spirit. No, like, sometimes what, eight tournaments.
Sometimes they get banged out. Mate, there was a tournament they got banged out ninth place. Again, Vitality makes the semis of every tournament. That means basically Z was going to be a EVP at every single tournament he plays in, guys.
Yeah, but I agree. I would be shocked too. But the only argument I found in looking at it, you know, looking at the statistics, was that 2018 example where Simple were the better player, you know, and won the best player of the year. Device was second, despite Device obviously having the best year, the best individual year he's ever had as well as a player, but also with his team in Astralis. The difference in big event rating, and I think that's something they cared a lot about back then, if I'm not mistaken. Device had a big event rating at 1.22 in 2018, and Simple was 1.3, right? So a difference of 0.08. This year, big event rating, Donk is 0.1 better than Saibu. He's at 140, Saibu is at 130. So there's a bigger difference in big rating or big event rating this year between Donk and Saibu that there was in 2018.
I'll give you a counterpoint then. Here's a counterpoint. Yeah? Like, this doesn't totally work because what you see with your eyes won't work in this sense. But what you could argue is Ziwu also did play more big games in big events, though, which will make it harder to have the same rating. This is why, by the way, I don't mind the ratings being an interesting way to debate or stats, but it does all ultimately come back to, when you look with your eyes, what does your brain tell you? There's another reason, by the way, why Donk's insane. When I watch Ziwu play, I go, wow, that might be the best CS I've ever watched. But notice the difference in this comment, Pimp. When I watch Donk play, I go, I still don't understand how he did that. I've watched so much CS, I should be jaded by now, Pimp. Like, I actually am. You know what? I'll give you an example. Torji could have the best game of his life, mate. That doesn't even touch the sides for me. I've watched the best Orpus to ever play CS, mate. He doesn't even crack the top 10. But I'll tell you what, when I watch Donk do insane T-side stuff, I'm like, I've never even seen that from Nico, bro. And I thought he was the shit. I actually struggled to find comparisons of who's ever done this sort of shit. I mean, for real, his spray looks like he has an aimbot. It doesn't even look like he has recoil like the rest of us. He has like the no recoil cheat or something. This will be on fucking Vaxux now, whatever. It does look like that, though. That's how good he is. Yep.
That's true. That's true. I'll give you the map argument as well. I think Saibu has played 45 more maps in big events, you know, throughout this year. But both of them are performing equally well. Like that's the sick part. And
yeah, true.
I know people are like.
By the way, it's why I'll tell you, if you're someone who's mad and you're a Ziwu fan, don't worry. Yeah. I'm going to make this fair for you. I really hope these roster moves do work out in spirit, and next year the teams are equally good. That would be my dream. Then let's just have the equal. Let's just have a fair fight. You know,
that'd be nice. And then
wouldn't that be awesome?
Get their shit together and have money in that conversation as well.
Let's do it.
That'll
be great. Let's have the number one player of the year just be who was better. Let's just have them all make a bunch of trophies, and then let's the players decide it. Basically,
That's a dream come.
Because we are sort of arguing basically Vitality, the teams, basically won Ziwu this award.
Yeah, true. I will just one final point on that, because I think, as you said, like you can say Saibu, and I won't be mad.
I won't either.
To be fair. Yeah, and you can say Donk, but what excludes those two from the rest of everyone else? Obviously, they are better right now, but also, I know people love to look at, you know, how does a player do against the top 50 team? How does he do against the top 30 team, a top 10 team? Like, they don't get worse, you know? They play equally good against the best teams in the world. So, whereas your argument, you know, Saibu has played more maps, then I agree, and I think their rating drop is like 0.02 from when they go from playing a top 5 team to a top 20 team, but no other player does that, you know? Basically, every other player out there will do better whenever they're playing against the top 20 team, because you're more likely to win, and you're more likely to win by a bigger margin. Thus, your stats are getting better, right? But that's the crazy thing about Saibu and Donk. Like, they obviously win, you know, but even in games when the games are close, when Spirit are playing Vitality and it's a double overtime game in the fucking semifinal at the Major on Mirage, Donk is posting the same rating as he would have done against a shit team, top 20, where they would win 13-6, you know. And that's the crazy part about those two. I feel like the way they consistently find impact in every single game they play, regardless of the level of opposition, that's what makes them so much better than everyone else. Monesi have struggled to do that a little bit throughout this year. He's had a bit of a habit, you know, to not necessarily farm, you know, against weaker teams, but he's just been a bit more inconsistent. And then when you look at the second layer of players, you know, you look at your Shiros, your Kaiserautos, et cetera, they all, most of them have the tendency that whenever they play better opposition, they will drop a little bit, which is totally natural. You know, it's not even a critique, but it's just to tell you the story of Donk and Saibu. For them not to drop, for them to be consistently delivering the same output regardless of who they play, that's unheard of. Like, you find very few players in the history of Counter-Strike who has that trait, which is fucked up, basically. And that's why they just, this year and probably for years to come, you know, will outlight themselves as always being players that are in the conversation to be the best in the world.